Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planting leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
So good to have you. We'll get going here. My name is Dave Page. And this is...
My name is Mark Lee.
And we're both church planters. And Mark's right in the midst of it. I planted three churches over a 22-year period, and now I'm a manager. I'm a coach. I'm the Don Mattingly of the FCA West. So.
And please listen to Dave's wisdom. I mean, he's helped me so much, even in our formative stages. He's still a great coach and mentor figure to me, so I'm just trying to give you props.
I appreciate that, Mark. Your money's in the mail. But we want to talk to you about a model, and it's a launching large model. And it's unique. I'll say this up front. It's not necessarily for everybody. I think you want to find the model that fits who you are based on how your wiring is. I would even say the amount of faith that God has given you, your leadership capacity, a number of things. And if this model resonates with you, fits with you, then man, go for it. Because Mark can tell you it's something that he used. We used it three times. He's used it here just recently in the last few years. And it's just a tremendous model.
Can we even tell our stories? Why don't you tell your story?
Yeah, why don't we tell the stories? My story is we felt called to start a church, had no idea what that meant other than I knew I didn't know what I was doing. And my idea was to find somebody who did. And through God's providence, he led me to a guy named Rick Warren. And I thought, now here's a pretty good church starter, church planner. Saddleback was about 10 years old at that time, so they'd already grown to a few thousand. And I met Rick at an evangelism conference, and we started talking. And long story short, he ended up being our sponsoring pastor, sponsoring church. We went out to a community called Palmdale. We prayed over three different areas. God led us there. We started with a core group, a Bible study in our home, and out of that brought together a launch team. And launched. And this was like before people were launching large, really. And we launched with 154 people, which I was just thrilled with. I mean, awesome. In a lot of churches in our Southern Baptist, that was my background before even Jump Up Free, they'd been going for 20, 30, 40 years, and they didn't have more than 150 people. So to start with that, it was fantastic. We were there 8 years. We saw God do tremendous things, grow the church, hundreds of people who came to Christ there. Went up to a church in Auburn, which is in Northern California, Sacramento area. No feeling like God's going to do this again because he moves in such a great way. But at the same time, that faith muscle had been built. We'd seen God move. So when he called us to do it again up there, we had some friends this time in the area. They're the ones who actually contacted us. We went up and we did it again. And we saw an even larger launch, actually almost a three times as large a launch. And saw that church just grow in a tremendous way. We were there for 10 years. And then after that, we felt God called us to do it one more time, came back to Southern California, did it just for a year and a half, had a great start. That church has continued on. The guy came in after me when they asked me to take the position I'm in now with Evangelical Free Church as their director of church planning. So that's my story. Tell me yours.
Like I said, my name is Mark Lee. My church planning story goes something like this. My wife and I moved out here from Indiana. I'd started going to seminary. I was part of this church planning team, and it was a great experience. However, I came away from that experience going, wow, God, that was so awesome. I hope I never have to do that again. But God just has an extremely funny sense of humor. And so from that church plant, I was really looking forward to going to an older church, learning from the wisdom and experience of an older pastor. So I went to a church that was about 400 or 500 people. And my gosh, that was like the biggest church I'd ever been a part of at that time. And the pastor was such a great shepherd and such a great person. And he said, Mark, you know what? I'm bringing you in to start this young adult ministry to 20s and 30s. But you know what? Hey, I know you're doing that part-time, but could you go out and plant this church too? And I was like, oh man, you are crazy, old man, if I'm going to do all of that on a part-time salary. But there came a time where our mother church was celebrating its 39th anniversary. And he said, Mark, I want to cast a little bit of vision on what the next 39 years holds for this church. And so could you teach with me, and can you vision cast maybe for me about why we need to be planting new churches? And I said, well, I don't want to do it, but okay, if you want me to teach on this, I'll go ahead and teach on it. And you know, as I began to study some of the apologetics of church planting, now you guys probably already know some of these statistics, and these statistics are probably even old from when I first studied it, but to even think about how most churches in America had either plateaued or were dying, you know, that there is a revival happening all over the world, well, except for Europe and North America, how I heard that I think it was either North America or the United States was the fifth largest missions field in the entire world. And when we all know the C. Peter Wagner quote, when I saw that, like, church planting is the most effective methodology underneath heaven to reach unchurched people for Christ, I've got to tell you that there was like this holy discontent inside of my heart. Because I had accepted Jesus Christ in November of 1990, my freshman year of college. And from college to the next 13 years from then, I think I had seen maybe people come to Christ, maybe I could probably count them on both of my hands. And I started to think to myself, yeah, wow, what if the greatest, you know, here I was as a young guy, always, you know, looking to the other churches, thinking, wow, it would be so amazing to go to this church. It'd be so amazing to be on staff at Saddleback. It'd be so great to go to, I don't know where, you know, you fill in the blank. But then I was like, wow, what if the greatest move of God wasn't something that I read about in some online article, but what if the greatest move of God was something that I got to participate in? And so I went to the senior pastor and I said, well, Mark, me and your worship leader have been talking. Which, if you're a senior pastor, all of a sudden you should be like, uh-oh, what are you right about to say to me? I said, me and your worship leader have been talking. And I said, Mark, I know that you've been interviewing church planters. It was his vision to plant this church. I know you've been interviewing church planters to go out there. Me and Tom, we feel like maybe God is moving in our hearts. But, you know, we want to hear that confirmation through you, Mark. I said, you know, we love it here, Mark. We're not coming to you because we're discontent. We want to hear God's voice through you. So if you want us, this was our honest to goodness conviction for the both of us. We said, Mark, if you want us to stay, we're going to stay here for the rest of our lives. Now, who knows if that's actually true? That's the way the both of us genuinely felt. And we said, but Mark, if you want us to go, then we want to hear God's voice through you as well. And so he said, hey, I really think God is in this. So we went out to this community. We're probably going to talk a little bit more about, like, maybe missional keys, and maybe I'll talk more about that as time has gone on. But man, it's just been such a faith-filled venture. I know where you guys are at. We only planted Vantage Point 5 years ago, and I still remember what it was like 5 years ago to sit in your seats. And for me to be up here is not only a testament to the glory of God, but like also, like, I'm just honored that to be here for you to even listen to anything I have to say. So Dave, go.
Thank you, Mark. Notice the picture behind me on the screen. I want you to study it just for a second. Tell me what you see in just a moment. We know the model in the New Testament. It's called church planting. The implication is of a seed being put into the ground, taking time. And after much time, much water, you know, Paul said, you know, I planted, Apollos watered, but God's the one who made it grow. So that is a model. It's a wonderful model. It's an agricultural model. And after much time, you see a little bit of sprout. And kind of the old school that I was raised in, you know, you start as a church, you're a mission church for a number of years. And then after a while, it's like you grow up and you become a full-fledged church. This is a whole different new paradigm. This is a whole different way of looking at it. So when you see that picture, because that's the picture of the metaphor of launching large, what strikes you? What do you see there? What do you see? Just, yeah, what do you see?
Force, the energy. Mm-hmm.
Notice the amount of force that it takes to get the rocket ship off the launching pad. That's what we're looking for. That's what a large launch does. It has that force. And the amazing thing about that force, if you play that out, they found the hardest barrier. There's a lot of barriers. There's a 50 barrier, 75 barrier, 100 barrier, 150, 200. The hardest barrier to break is that 200 barrier. Mm. And so many times we've seen this happen in the first or second year. Sometimes, even like Mark's situation and my second church we planted, we saw it happen from the very beginning. We blew by 200 right away in the first fall of the church launch when we started on Easter Sunday. So to get that beyond that, that's what can happen. And if you don't get beyond the 200 barrier within about the first 3 years, the chances are you never will. The odds are stacked against you at that point. And most churches don't. That's the reality. 90% of churches in America are 200 or under. So we have found this is such a tremendous model. So what else do you see there? What do you see? He saw the thrust, the force. Anything else?
Directional.
It's directional. Where's it headed? We're going up. Yeah. What else do you see? Anything? A lot of smoke. There's a lot of energy going on, isn't there? And you see the aftermath of it. People I know that live in the Cape Canaveral area of Florida say whenever there was a launch, their house shook. Things fell off the wall. It impacted the community around there. Large launches create a buzz in a community. Not so much a hype. Hype is more self-induced. Buzz is other people talking about you. So there's a buzz going on. There's impact all around. You see it. Everybody's talking about it. It's a big deal. That's the launch. Now, if you look at it here, and I think I've got to do this one, don't I, Jan? Will you do it? You got it. You look at here, this is actually a first preview. This is a preview of a guy named Matt Larson. He's actually a speaker here. This is in Thousand Oaks. It's a California university, kind of an old style theater they have there. And this was their first preview. They brought people together. They formed their launch team. They did a lot of word of mouth, a lot of social media, especially Facebook. They did a direct mail into their Thousand Oaks community. They had 220 at their preview. That's a good preview. Mark had it right around the same at their first preview. And it just felt like the church is already going, but people coming saying, wow, you know, this hasn't even started yet. What's it going to be like when it actually launches and actually becomes a church? So that's kind of a picture of it. The launch versus the plant, we talked a little bit about it. One time somebody said, you know, when I went to... when we started, nobody wanted to come to a planting, you know what I mean? It's like the birthing of a baby. A woman has the baby in their stomach, right? And everybody's like, well, I can't wait. You know, oh, great, you're pregnant. Oh, can I feel? Oh, yeah. But what they're looking for is when that baby's born. Then everybody wants to see the baby. And so they want to see the baby. It's kind of the same thing. They want to see the launch. And sometimes when you're gathering that launch team, it's hard, isn't it, Mark? Yeah. It's hard work. Yeah, they gotta tell them what you got. You didn't get a lot, but you got some.
Yeah, our situation was a little bit unique in terms of like our manpower resource, because since we were being planted by the mother church allowed us to have a fishing license within that church, if you want to call it. So the senior pastor got up and said, hey, if any of you want to go with these crazy guys, especially those of you who don't tithe and write me complaint emails, and those of you who think That's my sermon sermons are too long, you would be more than welcome to go out with these guys. So we ended up going with about 20 people, and I wasn't content with that, so we still made ourselves visible in the community. I still went out to Starbucks, made myself known, still went out to community gatherings, Chamber of Commerce, went to everywhere I could to pitch my story to whoever I could to get them to just buy into the vision of what we were doing in that city.
I think for Mark it was important, and we'll try and answer that. I think it's important that he added to the team he had. He had about 25 or so adults that had come from the church he was at. It wasn't that far away. But it was important for him to add more to that launch team and then to actually launch.
Yeah, because part of the downfall of getting a fishing license from a church that's too far away is that it's too far away. And so we had a group of people that we were still encouraging, you know, word of mouth, personal evangelism, all of those things. We were still inviting them to pray for people that they were going to invite to our service. But we knew that the downfall of relying on just a group of people who didn't live in the city was they were going to invite a bunch of people who most probably wouldn't stick. So we thought to ourselves, we can't be complacent with where we're at.
Yeah. So it's hard at the beginning. A lot of people I talked to, both unchurched people and church people, they didn't want to come to our Bible study. They didn't want to be part of our kind of launch team deal, but they're like, when you start the church, we'll come. So that was kind of the thing. You see the early church, you start with 12. Jesus chose 12 disciples. Then he had a great core team. He had a launch team of 120. They met in the upper room, right? And then the Holy Spirit came and it exploded. Peter preached, and it says there were 3,000 who were saved. Now, that's a large launch, I'd say. The church was launched in a large way. They didn't count the women or the children. That was men. So who knows? There might have been 5,000 at that point. The Church of Jerusalem ended up being a very large church. Wow. If you could go to the next one. We see the model with Jesus. It's not either or. It's a both and model. Jesus ministered to small groups, he ministered to his disciples, and he ministered to large crowds. You see the 70, the core, the 120, you see the 12, you see the inner circle of the three, Peter, James, and John. And then you see the early church, also the both and in the temple and homes, house to house. And then you see the two gathering models. And this is what separates a large launch model from another model. Number one is a core to crowd. That's usually how it is. We're going to start this small group, small group, small group, and we're going to go from a core, and we hopefully then are going to form a crowd. The large launch model is crowd to core. So we have sneak preview, sneak preview, sneak preview, sneak preview, and then ultimately launching. Here's something that's very important. It's what we call the critical mass. There's some benchmarks here. I would say the only one that might be smaller would be the red circle. Are you on that? Yeah, Jen's on it. So here's what we're looking at. We like to see about 25 up to 50. There's no limit. You can have more. We had 70 in my second church plant. My first church plant, though, I'll give you this as a word of encouragement. We only had 17 in the launch team. That's not very many. And it was by God's grace and things that just happened. We ended up having 154. We had back the next week only about 85, which is not that untypical, especially if you're doing a large direct mail and that kind of thing. But we were able to grow then from 85 on up. We just went up from there. But to launch large, you need about 25, I would say about a minimum of about 25 adults. 25 to 50 is a good range. In some ways, that's harder than when you actually do the launch because that gathering really, really is hard at the beginning, and it kind of separates some people who are church planners or not church planners. If you can't gather a team that has a vision that believes in what you're doing, then you're really not going to be able to successfully plant. Now, you could do a home church, and you could do a house church. You could do missional communities. There's other means to do it. But what I found for guys who do that, you need to seriously look at being bivocational for a long time, maybe even for your ministry at that point. Now, some of them won't tell you that, but that's what I've seen. And I've seen a number of guys come back to me later and go, oh my gosh, I wish I would have done the large launch model. You know, we're 3 years down the road. We're still running 25 when we're meeting out of my home. And I want to get it out of my home, but we just can't seem to make that jump. It doesn't seem to be growing. We become ingrown. And I'm not saying they're all like that. Some of them have had great success. But we just found this has been very, very effective. Stephen Gray, in a book called Fast Growing Churches, great book, he talked about struggling plants that are one-dimensional. They just have one worship service versus fast-growing churches that are multi-dimensional, usually multi-staff. They have not just one worship team, but they develop more than one worship team, and they ultimately have more than one service. I'm not going to even go into that right now. I want to move on. How did Jesus attract crowds? How are planters launching large today? Here's the leadership issue. Very few people come to Christ through small groups, so they found. Small groups are wonderful for discipleship. They're wonderful for leadership training, apprenticing. But most conversions start with a conversion with a friend, followed by a visit to a church. And I know with Mark and what we found in our situation, a lot of the salvation comes through the worship service, through preaching the gospel and calling them to decision and having them make the decisions. Yeah. Now, obviously, too, sheep beget sheep, and you see your people as they grow in their faith, winning people to Christ. But we see this large context, don't we, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, the worship service for us is a huge time where we call people to commitment, whether it be commitment for salvation. I mean, that's a very basic thing, but I think that's not the only thing that we do. We call them to commitment to be a part of community, or to take the next step of baptism, or to come and serve in the church body, or whatever it may be, to maybe stand up and to receive a tithing challenge, or whatever the case may be. So, I mean, we use the large group for many different things.
So the question I think we begin with is, what is large? Yes. We saw it happen in our church. We did it three times. They saw it happen. I mean, one thing we saw with Mark's preview, you know, and we saw this with ours. They had about 60-70% of people unchurched. Just the fact that we were reaching unchurched people, you know, how many did you baptize your first baptism at Vantage Point? Do you remember?
First baptism? Gosh, you know, it's probably like 8 or 9 or something like that.
Just
recently, part of the reason why I even went into church planting is because I would hear stories from you, Dave, just about, you know, just the you would tell stories about 40 or 50 people that were getting baptized at one time. And so we had 56 people baptized about a month ago. And that was like a huge highlight in the life of our church.
Jen, go back to the one with the Church of 1122. It has the red cross on it, if you see that. I'll give you an example. I don't have a stat like so-and-so Barnesett or whatever. Lifeway Research does, Jan's saying. So I guess Lifeway Research would be a place to check. But I'll give you an example. Go to the Church 1122. This is a guy named Joby Martins. Unbelievable story. Joby started this church, and it was an alternative worship service first that grew to a few hundred over 3 years. Then we mapped out a timeline. They got a Walmart that they built out. They leased. It had been empty for 3 years. They started out this church. They did the previews. They did the launching large method we're talking about. They launched with 2,500 people.
Wow.
And I told, now again, their core group was hundreds. And so we're not talking, you know, it's apples and oranges. They've been going really for 3 years. 2,500 people. Then that was last October. They're 1 year old now in October, Jacksonville, Florida, Church at 1122. Now they are running over 4,000 people. Their first baptism, they baptized 250 brand new believers.
Oh my gosh.
They're turning Jacksonville upside down, the city of Jacksonville. And they since had another baptism, another couple hundred people baptized. And the majority of these people are unchurched people coming. Now, a lot of them come through friends, and that's how they come to the church, is through word of mouth. But what they're specializing is the large group, expository teaching of the Bible, the gospel, the power of the word of God, passionate worship, and people being saved, and discipleship, a lot what we're talking about here, and that kind of thing. So in terms of that, I know off of my experience, I guess Lifeway has done research in that. I had heard that actually in Rick's book, The Purpose-Driven Church, had mentioned about the worship service seeing the most conversions versus people one-on-one, that kind of thing. So, but that's a very important point, because if that is true, then it, to me, it even lends more credibility toward this model and more in terms of productivity. I look at what's going to produce. What's, you know, what's biblically sound, what is working, and what also is culturally relevant. Because a lot of times, from the missional standpoint, and I'm not opposed. To me, it, whatever's working is great. I'm not opposed to anything as long as it's reaching people for Christ. But a lot of them, I think, make a jump and a misunderstanding that our culture is like Berlin, Germany, or it's like some places in Europe. And the reality is, it's not there yet. It may be there someday. I pray it doesn't get that bad where it's 0.5% Christian or 1%. Most people in America do believe in God. You know, no matter what they tell you, there's very few atheists. Most people do. Many of them have some kind of church background. Where we live in California, people don't know this. I've been here my whole life. Catholic is to California what Mormonism is to Utah. Most people in California, where you're at in Santa Monica, they've got somewhere they got Catholic roots. So there's some kind of belief in God, there's some kind of belief in Jesus, and there's some kind of belief in the Trinity. Now, many of them don't know Christ personally, but so it's a huge mission field where we live here in California. But those are just some things. So let me move on. Here's some examples, just to give some examples there. But I want to go to the what is large, Jan. So when we talk about, there you are, Mark. When we talk about large, I think you need to qualify it. And this is really important because a lot of people misunderstand this. It really depends on your city. It depends on the context you're in and your culture. Normally, when we talk about large launch, we don't have any particular number, but normally in a let's say just average median size city, then we're talking about maybe 100 or 200 or 300 or more on the grand opening, not the preview, which is the monthly service. So let me qualify that. I'm coaching a guy named just recently named Dave Miller. He's in a city called Exeter, California. Population's like 8,000 or 9,000, the whole city. And there's not like a lot of little cities around it. I mean, that's it. It's like Mayberry RFD. It's just this city in the central California. You ever been there? You're shaking your head. You ever heard of Exeter, California?
Connect with Mayberry.
You know that, the Mayberry, yeah. And so Dave's starting. And Dave had some wonderful church experience. He's a kind of a seasoned pastor, but he never planted a church. So he's saying, man, if we could do 100, that would be huge. The largest church is 400. It's Assembly of God. It's been there for 40 or 50 years. I said, that would be great, Dave. But I really think, because I knew Dave, and I knew he'd already been gathering people, I said, Dave, I think you could start with 200. Oh, 200. No way. No. I think you could. I think there's an outside chance. I know this is where you're at, you know, and this kind of thing. They did previews. They ran, you know, 70, 85, 100. They started, they launched, they had a little over 200 in Exeter, California. That's a huge launch. That's not a large launch. That's a huge launch. Now, let's say you're in Lone Pine. There's a city called Lone Pine, California, near Bishop. Population's like 2,000. You drive through it on the 395. What's a large launch in Lone Pine? Maybe 40, 50? So you see, it's apples and apples, oranges with oranges. You have to decide that.
And can I even say something? For me, kind of what established, not a vision, but like the goal of how we were going to launch as Vantage Point is just, I think, through my own practical eyes. I think when I, as even a Christian, would visit church plants or even smaller churches, if I went to a church, this was in our area, in our context where we were, if I went to a church of under 100, even me as a Christian, I was kind of intimidated because I stood out, you know, I couldn't stay anonymous. I would drive in and the parking lot was empty, and even that was kind of intimidating to me. And when we first started, we thought to ourselves, we don't want even our lack of numbers to be a barrier for someone. Also, hearing that 200 is probably, they were saying, the greatest growth barrier that you could break. And that if you don't break 200 within your first 2 years, what do they say? You never will. But are there exceptions to that? Absolutely. All I knew was this. Hey, that if 200 was the hardest growth barrier to break, and if I myself was intimidated to go into a room with less than 100 people, by golly, here's what we're going to do, everybody. I sat down with my launch team and said, we're going going to go visit some churches under 100. We're going to go visit some churches of 200 and 500 and 1,000 and 10,000. By golly, here's what we're going to do, everybody. We're going to get the greatest running start that we can at this thing. And we're not going to do it for our own glory. We're not going to do it to make a monument to Vantage Point Church or anything like that. We're going to do it because what we wanted to do, hearing all of these statistics, is that we just wanted to give this little baby of ours the highest birth weight and the highest chance of success that it possibly could. And so for us, launching large was 200. And like Dave said, man, I still remember our first preview service. Everybody was walking up to me and going, "Hey, Mark, like, how many chairs do we set up?" I was like, "I don't know." "Mark, how many Sunday school teachers do we need?" I was like, "I don't know." You know, and somebody said, right before the service started, even I was like, "Hey, everybody, you know, as the pastor, I need to go and just pray a little bit before service starts. So everybody kind of do your thing." But honestly, the reason I said that is because I didn't want to go out there and see how many people didn't show up. And then it was amazing because our little tech lady, Nancy Horton, came running up to me and she said, "Mark, there are a whole bunch of people coming. And guess what? We don't even know them." And so sure enough, I mean, it was just a fantastic 220 people ended up coming that day. And I'm going to share with you a bright side and a dark side to this. 220 people came that day. All, you know, the fruit of all of this risk and pain and effort and sacrifice, everything we felt like had paid off. I was just so thankful for what God had done. But here's the dark side to it. I was thankful for about 30 seconds before I said, "You know what? We could have had God, but we could have had 250. See, we need to go back to, in all of this, kind of why we're doing this even, and kind of where we get our identity from. Because some of us are in this, if we're honest with ourselves, for ourselves. And then we say, you know, if we hit 250, then we'd be happy. And if, you know, God, it would really be awesome for your glory if we hit 500. And then you reach that. And happiness becomes this mirage that you're ever pursuing, but you never achieve. And so numbers and statistics are so, they're kind of important, but I think you get what I'm saying, that there's this tension, and then there's this fight that you're going to have in your own heart between, you know, kicking in the gates of hell and at some point basing your identity on some stupid number that really means nothing. So that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, my situation, I'd never done this before, and Rick was coaching me, and we just had that 17. And I started teaching them even some of the stuff we're teaching now. And so they were like, they were all Christians, Pioneer, "Let's start this church." I said, "Here's the hill, let's charge." They're like, "Let's start now." I said, "No, we can't start now. We got to start 6 months from that." I said, "But you taught us the most likely time for unchurched people to come is on Easter, and Easter is just 3 months away. So there's no way we could start on Easter. We don't have..." I listed 10 things: sound system, place to meet, you know. And they said, "Can we pray about it?" And I said, "Well, yeah, we can pray about it, but that's not going to do any good." And so I said, "Okay, we'll pray about it for a week." We had a home Bible study, 17 people. We pray about it for a week. We come back the next week. Every one of those 10 things had been answered.
That's awesome.
Sound system from it was in storage, been used one time by Rock Band in San Jose, selling it to us for $2,500. And we had no interest, make payments. Place where we were going to meet, they found a great place to meet at a hotel, banquet room. And it just went down the road. Children's equipment, all this stuff. So I said, "Okay, all right, that convinces me. God's calling us to start Easter." So I said, "Well, what should we pray for? How many are we going to reach?" And I just thought 100 would be over the top. And they said, "Let's pray for 150. And I said, "Oh no, I've created a faith monster here. I can see it now. You know, we're going to have like 103 and they're going to be disappointed because we're praying for 150. I said, "Okay, we'll pray for 150. And so here's the 17. I said, we're in a hotel. It's continental breakfast, 10 o'clock service. I said, "We're going to serve them. We're going to be servants from the beginning. We're going to serve them as they come in, the food and all of that." The 17. And so they come in. 10 o'clock comes. There's like 20 people in the room. And I'm thinking, oh no, oh no. And so then I kind of poked my head out in the hall, and there's a whole bunch of people kind of gather out there, and I look a little further out in the lobby. Our greeters are doing a great job, you know, and the problem is they're not moving them along, and they're talking to them too much. So I said, I get up and I go, we're going to start at 10:15. We still got a lot of food to serve you, and we start at 10:15. Did the service, about an hour-long service. Three people got saved that first Easter Sunday, and final count, 154 people.
Wow, that's awesome.
I was like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. But what it comes down to in large is critical mass.
Yeah.
Critical mass. How many do you have? What is critical mass? We'd say it's about 75 people. So 75 people. Now that can't count kids. If you bring kids in, if you got 25 people, that's great in a home. You put 25 in an average size living room, it's electric. It's fun. It's exciting. It fills the room. You put 25 in a room like this. You put 25 in a cafeteria, in a theater. Unchurched person comes in, it's not happening. The difference between 25 people singing versus 75 people singing or 100 people singing. And so by doing the larger launch, even though we started with 154, got back 85 people, we were already at critical mass. What happens is some start, you know, much smaller, they don't do previews, and maybe they start with 50 or 75, maybe they have 75, but then when the next Sunday, it's maybe 45. Now they're down below critical mass. Here's just some examples.
That may be a good segue, because we only have 20 minutes left, so maybe we should go right to the W's and even explain what previews are.
I think so. Let's jump to that. Where's Jan? Is she there? She's not there, so we're going to jump to that. If you will, draw out on your paper a W, a big W. And I'm going to draw it up here. So here's what it looks like. And what we call this is working the W. The W is not biblical. It doesn't stand for anything. It's just a symbol of a W. So what we got here, you always wondered that, didn't you? So what we got here is I want you to put P number one. That stands for preview number one. And then over on this side, we're going to put P number two. That's preview number two. In the middle, right here, put CE. It stands for comeback event. It's an event that you have after your first preview, 2 weeks later. And then down here, LT. And LT stands for leadership training. So,
and just even to explain this W right here, what Dave has drawn here is the different weeks of the month. So
yes.
If this is the first weekend of the month, and this is the second weekend of the month, and this is the third, this is the fourth, and this is then the first weekend of the next month. So there are 4 weeks between them, or monthly services.
So they're set up to be monthly services. That's how previews go. And the way it started, a lot of people don't know the origin of the preview service. It started by a guy at a church called Bayside Church in Granite Bay, Sacramento. And I was up in Auburn, the second church I started. I came about 2-3 years after that. His name's Ray Johnson, the pastor. And the director of their church planning for the Covenant Church at that time, Dave Olson, who's written the book, you may have heard of, The American Church in Crisis. Dave Olson had this idea. He said, what if we did monthly services with the idea of gathering people in order to form that critical mass early on? And we did a number of these, and then we brought all of those people together into the grand opening. What would happen if we did that? So they went out and recruited Ray Johnston. Ray was working for the denomination, kind of the overall, the youth guy. He'd been a youth minister, tremendous communicator. Ray said, I'm not feeling this, but I'll do 6 months. I'll give you 6 months in this. And so they did it. They rented the Granite Bay Country Club, where they used to play golf. They said, we'll rent this. The room sat about 150, and they didn't know how many chairs to set up. I mean, they had precedent for you, but there was no precedent then.
No.
And so they set up like 50 chairs. They did a direct mail in the community. They gathered a core group of maybe 25 adults that were all Covenant Church people, and they had Ray. And so they prayed. They did this thing. It was a January. It was just like today. It was raining. And they thought, oh, no, nobody's going to come. You know, They were originally going to set up 100 chairs. The rain came, they set up 50 chairs. About 200 people came. People were standing against the wall. They had a little overflow room. They didn't have video in it. They just tried to put some sound in it. And they thought, maybe we're on to something here. And they didn't even have a long-term plan, but it worked so well, they thought, we'll do another one the next month. So they did another one the next month, and same kind of response. They ended up doing 6 preview services over 6 months, and then did their launch and ended up starting with about a little over 300 people.
Dave, and what do you think the benefits of doing monthly services are? Because that's just such a foreign concept to most people. What, you're going to only do service once a month?
I'll hit that lob pitch.
Yeah.
I think one of them is unchurched people, and that's your target. And some people understand this. You get Christians who are part of the core team. You want to get some strong Christians, pioneer, let's go for it Christians. One time Rick Warren said in a conference here, he said, boy, if I was starting a church again, I'd get all non-Christians to start the church. I don't know anybody who's ever started a church with all non-Christians. Sounds good. We saw people saved in our launch team, but we didn't start with all non-Christians. You get catalytic people who share your vision to start, but then once you train them, the focus, you're discipling them, the focus is outreach, winning people to Christ, seeing them come to Jesus, networking their friends, building relationship with the lost, and as they then start coming, they're inviting them to these services. And so unchurched people, church once a month? Yeah, that's cool. You know, it's not every, we ease them in. Now for us that have been in church a long time, we're like once a month. When Mark's service ended, I was at his first preview service. It was spontaneous clapping, just like, wow, that was amazing. What a neat experience. And they're like, oh no, we got to wait a whole month before the next service. Oh no. And that was Mark's job as the leader to teach them why they needed to wait a month. There's a strategy. We're gathering more and more people for the launch to break that critical mass. And when they begin to understand, they had this, but there, it wasn't just a month where you didn't do anything. He had 220 people to follow up on in a month. He had people coming back to a comeback event, and he had leaders he was training on the off weeks there before the next preview.
And here's another benefit of doing monthly services. Nobody ever wants anything as much as they say they want, and you are never as ready as you think you are. And so what I mean by that is this. Like, they say that people should have what? About 2 to 6 preview services? You like 2 to 4 preview
like
services,
two to
right?
2 to 4. They did 6. You did 5.
We did 5 preview services.
Yeah,
5 and a half if you count Christmas Eve.
At least 2, because 1 is just 1 and then the launch. So we like to have at least 2. I prefer 3 or 4 if they will.
Here's the thing, man. You are never as ready for that thing as you think you are. Because here's the deal. Like every organization, and we have to, as Christians, define what are biblical business practices and what are unbiblical business practices. Just because something is a good business practice doesn't necessarily mean that the church should adopt it. But here, I don't necessarily think that there's anything unbiblical about this. I saw Ocean 13, 14, 18, I forget which one it was. But it's the one where Al Pacino is starting the hotel and he's like, soft opening? Whoever heard of a soft opening? Back in my day, you just started on one day and that was it. You know, and the reason why every organization has a soft opening, in essence, is because they want to test everything out to make their first day the best day that they can make it. Let me give you an example of what we're talking about, man. When we had our first preview service, you know, the band got up there. We were all jazzed. We had a whole mess of people sitting in there for us. We were so excited about everyone that was there. The band went up there. They struck their first chord. And then the power went out in the entire place. I mean, we had flipped the breakers in our little gymnasium just because we had overloaded the circuits that we had plugged into. You do not want that to happen on your grand opening. When you do these monthly services, what you begin to find out is that the sound people begin to tweak the room a little bit better. And the greeters begin to understand where to position themselves a little bit more. I shouldn't have been hiding behind the tree. I should have been up by the curb a little bit more. The parking people know better what to do. We had to go back the next week, and we had to go, okay, how do we begin to understand the circuitry here? Because we don't want to put everything on the same thing. So we wanted to tweak and tweak and tweak so that the grand opening was the best that we could make it. Here's the thing. When you first pitch the idea of monthly services to your core team, they're going to think that you are like the craziest, the stupidest person that ever lived. Up until you end amen on that first preview service, then they look at you and say, thank you, Jesus, that we don't have to do this next week. And so yeah. You are never as ready as you say you are. Number two, people never want it as much as they think they want it. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about there. After we had launched, everybody thought at that point, I know, you can hear the rain come down. That is pretty heavy. But everyone thought that we should be a full-service gas station from the moment that we started as a church plant. And so people came up to me and said, well, we got to have a youth ministry. And I said, no, we're going to have a youth ministry when we're ready to do youth ministry. And so we didn't have a start our youth. We had a youth small group, but we didn't start a youth ministry a year and a half into it. Let me tell you this. Every single person who ever bothered me about starting that stupid youth group was not there the day that we first started it. And so all of these people are going to be like, we got to meet. This is what I think, that the previous services are almost like putting tension on a bow. And when you don't have that much tension / what is called anticipation or excitement, you're not placing very much power on that boat. And then you doink, and the arrow just kind of falls to the ground. But with each preview service, this is what we noticed. We were putting more and more and more tension on that bow so that when we hit our grand opening, we exploded into our grand opening. There was excitement. There was anticipation. We were the talk of the town. Everyone wanted this thing to start. And so when we finally got to that point, man, everyone was excited. You and me both know that when you go to weekly services and that grand opening is already passed, it is so hard to recapture the momentum that comes with that grand opening. You know what I'm saying? So this is what we did. We put tension. No, you don't want it just yet. You don't want it. We got them to this feverish pitch where they were foaming at the mouth. And then we were like, okay, now we're ready to start.
I like the foaming at the mouth. So here's how it looks. If you played this out, there would be a W here. There would be a W here, depending on how many you did. And then you'd be doing the grand opening. So that's kind of how it plays out. The goal after you have this, you want to capture the names, you want to get the emails, all of that. You're inviting them back to this. This is a comeback event. It could be a barbecue. It could be renting a bowling alley and a whole bunch of lanes. It could be meeting in your house. There's a lot of different ways. Everybody's new. But the goal is you're wanting to build relationship with them. That's the key. So they think you're weird already because you're a pastor and a pastor's wife or whatever. And then they see you on different ground. There's no agenda at this other than to get to know one another. So that's the key, is we want to bring them back. And then we want to continue to train our leadership, our launch team. This is leadership development, spiritual gifts training, where they're going to serve, building their faith, all about that. Teaching them to reach out to their friends, praying for the lost, praying for the next preview service. So this kind of becomes the pattern. And you do this on a regular basis. And then even once you start the church, let's say I'm way over here and I've done four previews and now I've launched. Now, let's say I launch like Mark launched in February.
February, the weekend after the Super Bowl.
So and there was a don't launch on the Super Bowl. They said, oh, it's at 3:30. Don't launch on the Super Bowl. It's like a national holiday. Even though it's a morning service, people are thinking Super Bowl on the Super Bowl Sunday. So Mark launched February. We did that on purpose so he could get kind of a double whammy on Easter. The people who came to his grand opening, over 300, we figured if we could network those friends then to invite for Easter, how powerful would that be? And so they did, and they just had a tremendous Easter. Had like
this depends on your context too, but you get a double bump from Easter. Mother's Day is big for us. That's right after Easter.
Yeah.
And then you go into the second best time is probably a lot of people debate this. Second best time will probably be doing your previews through the summer and then launching in the fall. The third best time would probably be launching on doing your previews through the winter months and then launching on Easter. Some people debate between number two and three just because when you launch on Easter, hey, what a great time to launch a church, but you're so close to the summer at that point that it's easy to take that dip. And sometimes, I mean, a more established church can recover from the summer a little bit easier because your people are signed on and they're used to being there. You know, they've only been at your church maybe a couple times by the time summer comes. So who knows if you've permanently lost them at that point. So those are the best times of the year to have a grand opening.
I call it the dog days of summer for a church planner. And the three churches I started, we did start on Easter. We had great follow-up then going into Mother's Day. So if you played this out, it not only becomes a way to start the church, it's a wonderful pattern then for as the church goes. You play this out, and let's say you end up on Easter here. Now you have a next big day. So think of the big day as a preview. You've already started, so you're not doing previews anymore, but you're still having a big day, great time to invite guests, unchurched people. Then you have a comeback event. It's a relationship builder. You have people who come to know Christ, so you have a new Christians class. You begin that discipleship as well. And then you have leadership training going on in those off weeks. And then you have another big day. It's not usually Father's Day, is it? Father's Day isn't usually a big day. But it may be something you do in the summer. It may be a Friends Day you do in the fall. Christmas Eve now, in some surveys, has surpassed the amount of unchurched people who go even above Easter, which is very interesting. So we've done, and they did a preview service on Christmas Eve, didn't you?
Yeah. Here's another point. Avoid the temptation to ooze into your grand opening. And let me tell you what I mean by that.
Ooze?
Your first preview is your most important preview service. That is where you're going to place, out of all of your preview services, those are where you're going to place all of your chips. Those are where you're going to place all of your marketing dollars. This is the time that you want to have almost all of your equipment set, because they call it a preview service for a reason. Because what you want to do is you want to actually give them a preview of what your church is actually going to look like. There's so many people who think that, during this five-month process, you know, we're just going to kind of play church for a couple months, kind of see what happens. And no, these are real services.
Yeah.
Real sermons are going to get preached. Real people are going to be saved.
That's right.
And so avoid the temptation to just kind of like into your grand opening. Man, you're going to bust into your first one. And with each preview service, here's what you're going to do. Since it's a month away, I don't even know what I'm doing tomorrow, let alone what I'm doing next month. And so that's where the connection card is so important. And what I'll do is I'll do something like, hey, everybody, and I mean this, hey, everybody, here's what I'm going to do. I am going to pray individually for each and every one of your prayer requests. And so what I would love for you to do is I would love for you to write down, you know, what your prayer request is or who you're praying for or whatever the case. Each, and I will personally lay my hand on, pray for everyone. Then people go, oh, yeah, you know, it's going to be important for you to contact them via email. Here's another thing I did. What you'll want to do during the preview services is you'll also want to preach a series typically. Don't just preach a bunch of different things, discombobulated things. What I did anyway was we put it all under one series on different weeks. And for me, the first thing that I did was I had kind of a more felt need type series. So the first week was on stress. I talked about, you know, this tendency that we all have to go crazy and how we need to place our trust in Christ. And so here's what I did at the end of the service. I said, you know, the usher's going to come around. They're going to pass out stress balls for everybody. And on those stress balls is our logo, is our website, and the date of our next preview service. You want to leave them with something that's connected significantly to what it is that you just did, but something that's going to remind them of when that next preview is going to be.
And that was just a great idea. I remember the stress ball at the end of that service. It had the date on it, so they're ready to go. So just kind of to wrap it up, we want to give a few minutes for questions that you might have. But basically, that's the methodology. That's the strategy. The key becomes then, how do you advertise? How do you market it? It's a combination of things. It's not just one thing. Some have used Facebook, pay-per-click, ad campaigns on that. You can design that how you want, working with Facebook. Others have used direct mail. Mark used direct mail. We used direct mail. People don't know this. Saddleback, Rick would tell you, he grew this church a lot by first impressions, people who came the first 10 years of Saddleback by direct mail. When a church first starts off, nobody knows you, nobody knows in the community knows your church. It's a wonderful way to do it. We do a shotgun approach, not a target. We don't just say we're going to go for 18 to 25, 18 to 30. We do it all, because a grandmother may get the direct mail, say, well, I already got my church, but I have this granddaughter who's 21. She calls her and says, honey, here looks like a new church, contemporary church. I think you'd like it. Why don't you try it? Oh, I got that in the mail too. Your people start talking. They're talking to people, and then they get the mail out and they go, oh, is that your church? I just got a mail out. That's your church? Oh yeah, that's my church. We want to come. So direct mail, we usually mail this kind of size right here, 5.5 by 11. It sticks out better. That's the largest you can go and still get the bulk mail nonprofit rate for a postcard. So it's a very economical way. As a nonprofit, you got such an advantage over businesses to be able to use direct mail. The break is so great as a nonprofit. People say, well, it costs. You know, we had a guy in here a couple days ago, Maury. He just started in Turlock. I said, how much did it cost, Maury? $3,500. How many did you do? 15,000 people. Most of the people, homes in his community. How many did he start with? Small community, Turlock, started with 141 people. Now, this idea of 3,000, even 353.
On a Saturday night, too.
Yeah. And we don't recommend starting on a Saturday night, but his situation was a little different. But most people can't relate maybe with what Mark did or what I did, certainly not with what Joby did. But they can relate with Maury. 141 people after three or four previews and a mail out into a little city called Turlock. And so you can do it, but there's a lot of different ways of getting the word out. And if you don't get the word out, obviously people aren't going to come. So that's a big part of it. We just want to open up for questions, because we're just about done here. But what questions do you have? And then afterwards, Mark and I will be up here too, if you want to come up and ask any private questions as well. Yeah, here and then here.
Can you tell us your name and where you're from too?
Jason, Montana.
Montana, Jason.
Have you ever had anyone that had to launch, or known someone that had to launch in a facility other than they did one or two preview events in?
Yes, I do know of somebody. We don't recommend it, especially if you're sending out a mail out, because it's really confusing. And I remember the first church I started was out of a hotel. We wanted the junior college, but the junior college said, yeah, you can meet in the junior college, but you can only meet there 6 months. So we thought, we're going to do mail-outs for previews, we're going to launch, and then we'd only have another month or two, and then we'd have to move. How confusing would that be? Because one of the things with these, they have staying power. Sometimes people don't come to one preview or the grand opening. They come a couple weeks later. They save these. They bring them with them when they come. And if we would have moved, it wouldn't have been good.
What's crazy is this. This is kind of to the point, and it's not. We went to three services just 6 months ago, and we still have people coming at the old service times. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I would suggest the same thing. You know, once you begin to set that pattern, then you're going to have other people show up to the old place, and it just gets so confusing.
Now, we did move a year later. We met out of that hotel, got a great grand opening, great beginning. After a year, the landlord, the owner, almost like doubled the rent. At the same time, a brand new school, beautiful brand new school, elementary school, opened up. We talked with the principal. We got in. And it gave us an opportunity to do a second grand opening just a year into it. And that was really neat.
Yeah.
Who had the other? Yeah.
What's your name and where are you from?
Yeah, and I'm not, if you're like me, and I think I'm like the average unchurched in this way, if I go somewhere and they're asking for my personal information, I'm not usually going to give it. I don't know those people. You know, I'm not going to put my kid in the nursery. You know, I'm going to leave my baby in a nursery with people I don't know. So there is that sense of it. I would do disclaimers. You have to model it. I would say, let's fill them out. I'm filling it out. All of our staff, everybody's filling them out. So it's not just for first-time guests. I'd say you're not going to be put on a direct or a junk mail list. I guarantee it. We're not going to come visit you unless you request it, and most people don't. And so those disclaimers help. On really big days when we do Friends Day, we'd have a contemporary Christian artist come in and sing and do a little mini concert, 3 or 4 songs. We would even have a giveaway. We'd say, we got this CD, and we're going to do a giveaway. And at the end, we're going to pull out a welcome card. And you know, after you put them in, we're going to pull one out, and you win this CD. That gave just a little kind of incentive for people, but that was just hardly any. Did you do anything?
For us, like I said, we give them an incentive to put it in. Like, hey, I'm going to pray for everybody. So
prayer,
we give them a reason
prayer
to
request.
Submit it. But what we'll also do is during the service time, during the announcements, we'll have our announcements person say, hey, and right now, could everybody pull out their connection card and fill out whatever information you feel comfortable with. We're going to give you a moment to do that just right now, and you can even have like the Jeopardy song playing or anything like that. You know, we don't do that all the time, but we do that on the most important dates, and that is a really important date. And here's I agree with Dave that there are a lot of people who know that they're going to get marketed to, and so what we do is there's so many people who are more apt to give their information when they check in their kids than when they have to fill it out themselves in the auditorium. They understand that when they check in their kids, that it's for their own and their children's safety.
Right.
Bada bing, to this day, we get much more information through our children's check-in than we do through connection cards, but we do it both ways.
Well, one thing I did that we started a church in Auburn. Auburn's not a big city. The population, the city limit is 12,000. Greater Auburn, some cities around, it's about 40,000. So we're not talking about a big metropolis at this point. We started there. The vision God gave me was for a regional church in Auburn. They didn't have a regional church in Auburn. I was from Southern California. Northern California is like another state. We went up there, and even people we met, even people in our core group, they're like, Dave, people aren't going to drive 20 minutes to come to Auburn. If they're in Auburn, they want a church in Auburn. If they're in Applegate, a city over, 10 minutes away, they want a church in Applegate. But we just felt like God was going to do this. So when we had the greeting time, the first greeting time, everybody stand up and say, I want you to greet at least 2 or 3 people you didn't come with. Tell them your name and tell them what city you're from. And so I was already creating in their mind. So they would greet somebody and they'd say, hi, I'm Craig. I'm from Applegate. Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm from Grass Valley. So from the very beginning, they saw that this was a church where we launched with 300 people. This is a church where people came from all around, already creating that vision of the kind of regional church. Any others? And we got to go. One last question. We got to call it a night.
Lee from San Bruno.
Hey, Lee.
Either one of you guys, Mark or
David,
want to answer it?
Will
you guys both launch?
Right, I'll answer it. 10 seconds and let Mark has it. By far, his direct mail was the best for us. It wasn't a surprise because we anticipated it would be that. We had others. The surprise was the signage. We put A-frame signs at the corners, and a lot of people would check, how'd you hear about the church? Even that first one, they'd said, we saw the sign. But the direct mail was by far the most. We average, I don't know exactly what the breakdown was at that first one. I mean, everybody's new. When you got a core group of 50 and 200 or 300 people show up, everybody's new. But our church average, 50% would come to Christ in our church, and we'd baptize them. So we had a we had that 50% kind of conversion rate, which was very high.
I love metrics. Great question. I'll make this short. About 60% of our people came because of servant evangelism and direct mail. I'm not going to give you a statistic of those people. 50% of about everyone who came was unchurched. So have a good week.
Have a good week.
I'm so used to Sundays. Have a good week, everybody.
Have a good night. Have a good dinner.
Yeah, if you have any questions, you can stay. But thank you guys so much.
Thank you.